Bentley said, hoping to calm it down.
Buona,
she repeated, as the dog still fidgeted and tried to squirm out of the firm grip. The presence of the dog annoyed me, and instinctively I refused to uncross my legs or budge to make room for it, but she didn't seem to notice either me or my body language. Instead, she immediately rummaged through the backpack, found a slim plastic bag, and took out two tiny bone-shaped treats for the dog, then laid them in her palm and watched the dog lick them off.
Brava!
With the dog momentarily placated, she half lifted herself to fix her shirt, shifted in her seat once or twice, then slumped into a sort of upset stupor, staring out indifferently at Florence as the train began to pull out of the Santa Maria Novella station. She was still stewing and perhaps without noticing shook her head once, twice, obviously still cussing whomever she'd quarreled with before boarding. For a moment she looked so totally forlorn that while staring at my open book I caught myself struggling to come up with something to say, if only to help diffuse what had all the bearings of a gathering storm about to erupt in our little corner at the very end of the car. Then I thought twice about it. Better to leave her alone and go on with my reading. But when I caught her looking at me, I couldn't help myself. Why so glum? I asked. Only then did it occur to me how thoroughly inappropriate my question must have sounded to a complete stranger on a train, to say nothing of one who seemed ready to explode at the slightest provocation. All she did was stare at me with a baffled, hostile glint in her eyes that presaged the very words about to cut me down and put me in my place. Mind your own business, old man. Or what's it to you, anyway? Or she'd make a face and utter a withering rebuke, jerk.
No, not glum. Just thinking, she said. I was so taken aback by the gentle, almost rueful tone of her reply that I was left more speechless than if she'd told me to fuck off. Maybe thinking makes me look glum.
So yours are happy thoughts?
No, not happy either, she replied. I smiled, but said nothing, already regretting my shallow, patronizing banter. But maybe glum after all, she added, conceding the point with a subdued laugh. I apologized for sounding tactless. No need, she said, already scanning the beginnings of the countryside outside the window. Was she American? I asked.
She was. Me too, I said.
I could tell from your accent, she added with a smile.
I explained that I'd been living in Italy for almost 30 years, but couldn't for the life of me undo the accent. When I asked, she replied she had settled in Italy with her parents when she was 12. We were both headed for Rome.
For work? I asked.
No, not work. It's my father. He's not well. Then raising her eyes at me, might explain the glumness, I suppose.
Is it serious?
I think so. I'm sorry, I said. She shrugged her shoulders.
Life.
Then changing her tone, and you? Business or pleasure? I smiled at the mock formulaic question and explained that I had been invited to give a reading to university students. But I was also meeting my son, who lived in Rome and was picking me up at the station. Surely a sweet boy. I could tell she was being facetious, but I liked her breezy and formal manner that skidded from sullen to sprightly and assumed minded as well. Her tone jibed with her casual clothes, scuffed hiking boots, a pair of jeans, no makeup, and a half-unbuttoned faded reddish lumberjack shirt worn over a black t-shirt. And yet, despite the rumpled look, she had green eyes and dark eyebrows. She knows, I thought. She knows. Probably knows why I made that silly comment about her glumness. I was sure strangers were always finding one pretext or another to start a conversation with her, which explains that irritated, don't you even try look she projects wherever she goes.